HarperCollins presents A Cup of Tea and an Aspirin by Helen Forrester, read by Lizzie Hopley. Prologue. I look proper awful without me nashers. 1965. Angie, you mean you don't know what a court is? In disapproval, the old woman's lips pursed over toothless gums. She stared in genuine shock at the uniformed nursing aide who was slowly tucking in the sheets at the bottom of her bed.
Really, nowadays you young folk don't know nothing about nothing.
It's true, I really don't know, Martha, unless you mean a magistrate's court.
Tush, I don't mean a court up steps like that, retorted Martha irritably. I mean a place where you live, like a house.
The aide smiled absently, her black face not unkind. She did not answer. Working in a crowded old folks' home, she was used to being scolded by the 58 elderly bedridden women and 5 equally incapacitated men for whose daily care she was largely responsible. That is, being scolded by those who could speak. Some of them were the impotent victims of stroke, supposed to be turned every 2 hours and have their dirty nappies changed. And what a hopeless instruction that was. There simply wasn't time. Its frequent omission accounted for the strong smell of old urine in the room and for the cries of misery from patients because of bed sores. Opposite Martha's bed, 2 women suffering from dementia were tethered to their beds. They chatted inconsequentially to themselves most of the day, their minds wandering.
And God help me, thought Angie as she shook up Martha's pillow. If they ever get loose, I'll be fired by matron sure as fate.
Between the door and the dementia patients lay a victim of stroke, only able to grunt when she wanted anything. In the bed next to Martha lay poor Pat, another bundle of helpless skin and bone. To Angie, the look of impending death was clear on her face, and she had already anxiously reported this to Matron. With a grim smile, Matron had assured the nervous aide that she was overreacting as a result of her inexperience in nursing. The woman had seemed normal for her condition when she had toured the ward 2 days before. Angie had made no reply. She needed to keep her job. In her native Jamaica, rent by civil strife and surrounded by hunger and disease, she had seen so much of death. She certainly did not lack experience, she thought angrily. For 10 hours out of the 24, all the patients were largely dependent upon Angie. 2 other nursing aides, Dorothy and Frida, also from Jamaica, covered respectively the early morning and evening hours. A retired Irish nurse, Mrs. Kelly, also working alone, cared for them from midnight to 4 in the morning, and there were many ignored complaints from patients at her inability to cope with their needs for bedpans or glasses of water. The patients were either without family, or they were aged relatives of poverty-stricken local families who could not care for an invalid. Once they arrived in the nursing home, Matron assumed that they were all uniformly permanently incapacitated. Some, like Martha Connolly, however, had suffered a broken hip or similar and might have hopes of being restored to health, if appropriately treated. Matron was keen to retain patients like Martha, who, after the first few weeks, needed little care. Because they could do many things for themselves, they enabled her to keep her staffing costs low. Uncouth, coarse Martha Connolly, bed 3, room 5, daughter of the Liverpool dockside, knew that she was not totally disabled, but she had had to agree with Matron's sharp assessment that if she tried to walk, she was liable to falls. She must therefore remain in bed unless an attendant was in the room to escort her. Without any visitors who might have spoken up on her behalf, unable to read or write, she knew herself to be stranded, just a numbered bed, her humanity forgotten. Since all the aides were grossly overworked, she did not get much...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?